Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, I'm Grant Wall. Welcome to the Planet Football Podcast. This week's interview guest is The Guardian's David Squires, the world's preeminent satirical cartoonist on the sport of soccer. A quick reminder, if you like the podcast, it would really help us if you go to Apple Podcasts and provide a rating and a review, and we'd appreciate you recommending the podcast to someone you know. Onward! Our guest today is the preeminent cartoonist in world soccer, an Englishman who makes me laugh out loud every week with his satirical and whip-smart takes on the global game. You can see David Squires' work in The Guardian, and his books include Goalless Draws, Illuminating the Genius of Modern Football, and two volumes of The Illustrated History of Football. You can find him on Twitter at Squires_David. He joins us now from his home base in Sydney, Australia. David, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Hi, Grant. Oh, thanks so much. Thanks for that amazing introduction. I need to get you to announce me whenever I walk into rooms. I don't go out very often, but when I go to the coffee shop at the end of my street, that would be quite handy to let people know that I, Squires, have arrived.
I am available for hire, by the way.
Excellent.
But I do wish for our listeners here that if they have not seen your cartoons before, that they go do so now, because there's really no way I can do them justice by describing them. But one way would be, I think, to say that they're weekly satirical commentaries on soccer, often soccer in England, that are based on the news. And they make me laugh and, frankly, often contain multitudes of things if you're looking hard for them, and wonderful references, sometimes obscure, sometimes less so. But as I said, I'm probably not describing them very well. How would you describe what you do?
No, I mean, you're pretty much on the money there. Each week I produce a cartoon on a Tuesday for The Guardian, usually looking back on the previous weekend's action in the Premier League. But more often than not, I feel that the best cartoons are the ones that aren't really related to anything that's happened on the pitch. And if there's a story of around maybe football corruption, or if a pundit says something crass, or a manager behaves in a spectacularly graceless way, that's where I get my food and drink, and it's more fun to write about those things, because I mean, we all watch so much football or soccer, and it's when something spectacular happens on the pitch, often a cartoon that I would draw can't quite do justice to the skill that's been displayed. Say, like, if Tammy Abraham smashes one in from 30 yards, there's only so many ways that I can write about that. So I'm really happier when I'm writing about stuff off the pitch. And you know, there are certain characters who turn up regularly. Jose Mourinho not being in work at the moment doesn't stop me from drawing cartoons about him regularly. I should send him about 50% of my commission each week, I think, because he really does supply me with a lot of material. And then there's other people who turn up regularly, like Klopp and Guardiola, these kind of guys who are very outgoing personalities and, you know, very distinct personalities. It's harder to get a handle on someone, say, like Eddie Howe, the Bournemouth manager, who seems like a lovely guy, but doesn't quite provide that much rich material for a cartoon, you know.
I was going to ask you who you think has appeared most in your cartoons over the years, and it sounds like you just named a few of them. And I almost wonder, is there any connection in your mind to the old Special One TV, or? I hope I didn't just commit a faux pas by even bringing that up.
I don't know the special. What's the Special One TV?
So that was the puppets show that had that Mourinho. There was a Mourinho puppet.
Oh really? Oh no, we didn't get that here.
Oh wow.
We had. It sounds like do you know Spitting Image? That was a British satirical author. Yeah. So we had those in the 80s, but oh no, I haven't seen the special on TV. I should look it up. If I'm riffing on exactly the same material, I can have to change my ways. But no, I mean, yeah, Jose has been pretty constant since I started working for The Guardian 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then before that, when I was just doing these cartoons in my spare time, going back probably about 10 years, he's been one of the major players in football, in world football, and such a strong personality, and someone who I feel confident I don't need to hold back when I'm taking the mickey out of him, because I don't feel that if he saw the cartoons, his ego would be in any way dented, or, you know, I'm not going to bruise his feelings. He seems pretty robust.
Yeah.
But back to your original question, yeah, Mourinho is one. I often say I think I'm the only person in world football who misses Sepp Blatter, because he was a constant source of material, like just someone so openly, you know, venal and corrupt and shameless, and so he was good fun. And that it's often that the managers who come and go, usually through English football, because that's where most of my audience sits. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, people like Allardyce and Roy Hodgson, great characters, really distinct personalities. I don't know what drives someone to be a football manager. It sounds like an absolutely thankless task. But it certainly does seem to attract, at least in that generation of people, a certain sort of personality. I think you see the younger generation of managers have slightly different approach now, a bit more measured. People like Graham Potter at Brighton, and I mentioned Eddie Howe a minute ago. Even Frank Lampard seem to have a slightly more measured approach. Maybe that's a generational thing, I don't know, but I hope it doesn't last, because if everyone suddenly becomes like bland middle managers, then my career is over.
I mean, who are some of your favorite players to draw to include in your stuff?
Yeah, I'm quite careful with players, because I know that I can't criticize them for their ability, because they're far more talented than I could ever dream to be, you know. And also, you know, they're doing their best. I mean, I suppose everyone's doing their best, but I'm pretty careful with players. But some do have physical attributes that are like drawing. So Phil Jones at Manchester United. I think one of the more popular cartoons I did is when I depicted him as like an Easter Island statue. You know, he's got like massive head. And Jamie Vardy. I always have fun with Jamie Vardy. The cartoon that I drew this week, mm-hmm. You know, because he celebrated this goal at the weekend. He scored against Crystal Palace, and their nickname is the Eagle, so mm-hmm. he did this celebration afterwards where he flapped his arms like an eagle, and I said that he looks like a hatchling at the best of times, and this kind of really horrific picture of him coming out of an egg like a newborn lizard sort of thing. But it wasn't that much of a stretch. All I did was I just had to Google a picture of a newborn bird, and I realized that it looks quite a lot like Jamie Vardy already. He's got this sort of beaky nose and thin neck and sort of beady eyes. So, so Vardy, and of course Ronaldo and Messi, they're always fun to draw. Ronaldo especially, because he's got this sort of such enormous self-confidence, and even the way he stands with sort of legs akimbo and all the rest of it, you know, he's good fun to draw.
One question I have for you is, why aren't there more of you out there? You know, there's a lot of political cartoonists out there in the wider world, but I don't see many soccer cartoonists, even though the sport is so big. And even though, especially, you know, just with any sort of global appeal, kind of you're the guy from where I see it.
Whenever I do see the occasional thing, and whenever I do, I find the person, hunt them down, and threaten them, and then they stop. So that's why I pretty much have
There
the
you go.
monopoly. I don't know why it is. I think that people are doing interesting things, like satirical takes on football in other senses. I think maybe that cartooning is perhaps, or satirical cartooning is almost like a dying art form in some senses. I know some political cartoonists who struggle for work. I think that's one of as the print media shrinks, I think that illustrators and cartoonists are among the first people to be culled, you know? So maybe it's hard for people to find work or to find, you know, the space to be heard. For me personally, I had a full-time job in a completely unrelated field and was doing this as a hobby, and just sharing it online and on Twitter and Facebook. And that's how I grew a bit of a following. And then eventually the Guardian contacted me and said, "Hey, do you want to do one of these a week?" And it's grown from there. But yeah, not everyone has the time to spend, you know, an hour a night working on a cartoon when there are other pressures in your life and all the rest of it. Luckily, my life is completely devoid of interest. You know, I'm like a hermit. No, I'm not actually. I've got quite a rich and interesting life. So yeah, I mean, there's many factors there, but the main one is that yeah, I hunt them down and kill them because I've got a sweet deal here.
What I will say is your cartoons reveal someone who clearly follows the soccer news closely, who has a keen eye for absurdity, who isn't afraid to include references to pop culture and doesn't feel the need to explain every reference, knowing that if you have to explain the joke, it isn't really funny anymore, or less funny at least. Could you explain how you go about your process every week in producing one of your cartoons?
So say a week like a typical week like this one, I have a notepad on the go at all times, and throughout the course of a week, I just make a little note of any major stories that happen. So this morning, I've just written down that Arsenal have stripped Granit Xhaka of the captaincy, which in itself isn't funny. There's not a gag there, but you know, by the time I sit down to draw the cartoon next week, I might have developed that idea a little bit more.
Because you actually referred to this a few weeks ago. That's why I giggle.
I mean, I feel pretty bad for him. He's,
Right.
you know, but the situation itself, and I've tried not to take the mickey out of him too badly, but more the reaction to what's happened. That's often where I find the humor is, isn't on in sort of piling on one individual who's made a mistake. It's around the reaction to that incident. So say, with the process, that's so I have on a Monday, I sit down and hopefully I've got a list of stories from the previous week. And by that point, I'd have decided on one particular theme. That's if it's a good week and there's one big story, then that's perfect for me, and I can really focus and drill down on that. And if not, then it's a matter of sort of combining all those little elements to make a neat story, I guess. I have like eight panels to fill, so I always think, okay, at the bare minimum, you've got to write eight good jokes. And you know, when you sit down on a Monday morning, that's not always the time when you're in your prime comedy mode, you know, sort of 8 o'clock on a Monday. So gets a few coffees to get the motor going. And then, yeah, a lot of the little details that I put in are often a weird form of procrastination where I just think, okay, there's this space here in the background. I need to think about the next joke. So while I can, you know, decide what goes on the poster behind this guy's head, or you know, if there's a logo on a coffee cup and that sort of thing. But those are often the elements that people respond to the most the most kindly. You know, I think people like spotting these little things that I put in, and I enjoy putting them in as well.
Okay. And in the process, you've obviously got the ideas, you've got the writing, you've got the drawing. Like, in what order do those come in?
That's a good question. It's often the writing comes first. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, I mean, each panel is different. Sometimes I'll have a real image in mind, and I'll try to crowbar the writing around that. Mm-hmm. So I had a couple of images in mind for the cartoon that I've just done. One was of Jurgen Klopp wearing an offensive T-shirt, which I don't know if you saw last week. Morrissey wore a T-shirt which said basically F the Guardian. Yeah. And I wanted to have Klopp wearing a T-shirt saying F the Guardiola. And I couldn't work out how I could crowbar this in. So that was very much image driven, and then me trying to work out how to set it up in the text. But yeah, look, it's a lot of it is just organic, and without wanting to use that sort of Eddie Howe middle management phraseology that I was talking about a minute ago. So yeah, the best cartoons happen when you just get into, for me, when I get into almost like a trance-like zone and not overthinking it, you know. Yeah. And that's when the interesting things happen.
And do you have, I have an editor when I write a story. Do you have someone like that who you work with, who will say to you, I think you've really got something here, or that's offensive, or that's something that's just too obscure?
Sure. There's so I work with James Dart at the Guardian in the UK. Mm-hmm. And he pretty much lets me do what I want. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. None of my other clients are like that. And if I'm not sure about something, I know that I can message him and say, hello, I've got this idea, I'm not sure about it, what do you think? And he will often provide that editorial guidance. Mm-hmm. Say I did one a couple of weeks ago where I'd come up with this idea of I think you call it Where's Waldo in the States, right? So I had an idea for a Where's Waldo cartoon of where's Mesut Ozil, so because he hadn't been seen at Arsenal for weeks. And I said, look, what do you think about this? It's slightly different because there'll be hardly any text. And he said, yeah, sure, go for it. And then once I was halfway through, I immediately regretted starting it because it was such a pain. And I realized why that guy only puts out like one book every like 20 years, whatever it is. So yeah, James will often give me guidance, but for the most part, I'm left to just get on with it. And then once I submit the cartoon, he then tells me all the words that I've misspelt, all the names that I've got wrong, so many. And if there's any jokes that are too near the knuckle, then he will often talk about that. And but yeah, generally I'm allowed to. I've given a pretty free rein. I'm very lucky.
I mean, it is true that The Guardian is a place that runs the F word and any other word, it seems like, for writers. So I would guess that you have a pretty wide berth in that sense.
Yeah, sometimes they let me get away with things. Others, I have to like put an asterisk in a crucial vowel, but it still makes it obvious what the word is. But I try not to include too many swear words in there, but you know, sometimes I'm English, for God's sake. I'm an Anglo-Australian, so I mean, we're the kings of swearing, so it's pretty hard to rein it in sometimes.
I must say, you were able to include Pippo and Zaghi at a sperm bank earlier this summer during, I think it was the Women's World Cup.
So. During the Women's World Cup. And you know what? That was one of the jokes that I've had the most. Sometimes So each cartoon goes for a read, like the lawyers have a read, has a legal read, just to make sure I'm not, defaming anyone. And that was one of the things that the lawyers were adamant that I take out. And I was like, often I bend to their view because I think like these guys know what they're doing. I don't want to get sued by Sam Allardyce or whatever. It'd be humiliating. But that joke I thought was really good. So that was one where I
It
stuck
was.
to my guns, and thankfully it got in. I should explain that joke. I don't know.
I've tried,
There was an
yeah. It was during Women's World Cups. Yeah, you probably should.
There was I can't remember her name. There was an Italian player in a game against when they played Australia who got caught.
Bonanza.
She got caught offside, I think maybe 60 times. It was insane. And so I suggested that she was a result of an Italian fertility clinic in Milan in the 80s. And Pippo Inzaghi, famously always offside, had been, I suggested, the sole donator of sperm to this fertility clinic, and that's why anyone born of that seed is predestined to spend their entire life offside. It was funnier the way that I drew it in the cartoon than I've just explained it, but and there was one actually quite graphic image within that cartoon that I think probably. Now I look back like 6 months later, I can see actually why the lawyers would have had a problem with it. But I thought it was brilliant at the time, and I never think these things are great. Often when I draw them, I send them off and I'm almost wincing like, oh God, you spend so long working on them, you convince yourself that they're terrible. And then it's quite a relief when you don't get fired.
How long does it take for you to do one of these? Is it variable?
The Guardian cartoons usually take me 2 days. I try to get it down to one day, but the Guardian cartoons I take a couple of days working on. I do another one for Guardian Australia about the A League here. That takes me a day. And then I also work for L'Équipe in France and Elf of Freunde in Germany. And those generally take about a day and a half.
Interesting. I was gonna say we should get you to do stuff for Sports Illustrated on MLS and NWSL.
Yeah, let's talk about my commission, man. If you could invent another day in the week as well, that would be absolutely.
Exactly. Just 'cause for you to keep up with all the what's happening in the various soccer
Yeah,
worlds that you're connected to
that's
must
right.
take a while. I'm curious to know who has influenced your work, and I'm wondering, are they other cartoonists? Are they other types of people who do different types of things?
Sure. I mean, like anyone, I suppose, is a combination of many, many different people and influences. I think on the cartoon front, there was, I suppose, I came to it via the football fanzine scene in England in the late 80s and early 90s. These homemade magazines that often would have a cartoon in, and that's actually where I got sort of my first cartoons published when I was a young guy, back in the day. And then there's a British adult comic book called Viz, which I discovered when I was about 16. When I say adult, I don't mean adult, like
I hear you.
I just mean it's for grown-ups, right? And yeah, it's hilarious. It's satirical. It's profane. Some of it is deeply offensive. And I mean, when I discovered it when I was 16, I thought this is just amazing, mind-blowing stuff. So there's that. Anyone who has read my work for a long time will know that TV shows like The Simpsons and The Office and that kind of comedy writing, that timeless comedy writing, is has had a big impact as well. Cartoonists probably away, like as we were saying earlier, there aren't really that many football cartoonists, but say like someone like Joe Sacco, who's a great political cartoonist, He had a big influence on I guess my style of drawing, maybe not so much a style of writing. And then there are football writers as well. People, I've got a friend called David Stubbs who's written, he used to write these amazing match reports on England games from the perspective of this sort of retired wing commander character. Like, I think it was just a way that David could get away with channeling his most offensive thoughts through the like through the cipher of this character. But yeah, so it's so many, you know, so many.
Nice. As I mentioned, I did love your cartoons, especially during the Women's World Cup. And you got into the American team and, you know, and Megan Rapinoe and Donald Trump and a bunch of other topics. Yeah. And there was one frame after the final against the Dutch when your narrator said, I'm going to quote here, "Like everyone else, the Netherlands didn't quite have enough to stop the USA, but Serena Wiegman's team put up a solid first half resistance. Wiegman's facial expressions were also a highlight of the World Cup. When unhappy with her team, she couldn't have looked more disgruntled if she was listening to your uncle mansplain soccernomics," end quote. And then you have this uncle-type figure saying, "Yes, the U.S. women's team generates more income than the men's team, but do they have anyone of the star quality of Jozy Altidore? Your social justice warriors can't answer that one," end quote. Which is pretty funny.
Thanks.
Even though we do love Jozy here, but it showed a deep perception of a lot of things, including this fight for equal pay that the U.S. women's team has had and which has gone global to an extent.
Yeah.
You know, was there something about this Women's World Cup and the U.S. women's team and the issues surrounding everything that you enjoyed having as part of your work?
I got to be honest, before the World Cup started, I was a little bit anxious about it because I had only watched the occasional women's game. The so the Australian women's team are very popular here, and I watch most of their games, but I knew very little about women's football outside of Australia. So I was a little bit anxious going into the tournament that my ignorance would be exposed. I tried to research as much as I could going in, and once it started, I just was gripped almost instantly. It was such a great tournament, and I mean, you mentioned the story with Megan Rapinoe and Trump. That added another dimension as well, Yeah, and you're absolutely right that the issue about equal pay is something that has been discussed here in Australia as well. And just last night, we had the news that it seems like a deal has been brokered where the players in the women's team will get equal pay to the men, which is an amazing thing for them and an amazing breakthrough. And I'm sure it's partly, as well as the advocacy work that the people in the women's game have done here, I'm sure it's a result as well of the higher profile that the women's team in the US has given that argument. So, yeah, hopefully they're successful as well, and that they get what they deserve to.
You know, there's also some subtle things in your writing that can come off as these little daggers, and I wanted to give one example from last month. You had one with Mauricio Pochettino, the Spurs manager, where you wrote, quote, "Aaron Connolly, a terrifying bearded child man who will haunt Mauricio Pochettino's dreams, an odd sensation for a man who usually sleeps as soundly as anyone who speaks in support of Qatar," end quote.
Yeah.
And that's a reference to Pochettino getting paid recently to speak at a conference in Qatar.
Yeah.
Like, how were you looking for some way and some place to get that line in on Poch and Qatar, or how did that? What was the genesis of that?
Do you know that one? It's funny you picked that one because that was a like last minute addition. So I had finished that cartoon and then I sent it off and my editor had seen it. And he said, look, I don't know if you've seen this, but Pochettino has done this thing in Qatar where he's, you know, spoken favorably about the government. And he said, I don't know if there's any way that you can, you know, get the reference into that, which is unusual. Often he doesn't ever say that. And I thought, yeah, okay. I mean, I like to give a sort of rounded view of the people that I'm writing about. So yeah, often I like Pochettino. I think he's a good guy, but for me, that's a questionable thing to do.
Right.
So I had another look at that whole sentence and thought, okay, how can I change this without having to change the whole, like the whole cartoon? And yeah, so just that I managed to, again, like with the Klopp thing we were talking about earlier, I was able to jumble things around and add a late edit there. But yeah, it's funny you should pick that one out. I think I was in a pretty bad mood that day, so often there are more daggers than other weeks. But yeah, I think I had the knife sharpener out for that one. Yeah.
Oh, shoot. So we've gotten into how you got into cartooning. We've gotten into how you got connected to The Guardian. What led you moving to Australia?
Oh, yeah. So my partner's an Aussie.
Oh.
Yeah. So we moved here 10 years ago. And yeah, that's how I ended up here. Yeah. So yeah, it's nice here. Have you been? You should come. I know you've had your own experience with the Australian soccer community.
But, I was just about to get into that, which turned into a total badge of honor in me appearing in one of your cartoons. But I actually have been there. I was there for the 2000 Olympics, which were wonderful. Wow. And the good thing about Olympic soccer tournaments is they have it in the host city, which was Sydney, but they also farm it out to other cities. So you do get to see more of the country. So I saw games in Canberra and Melbourne and Adelaide and just had a wonderful experience. And then went back on vacation back in 07. So I'm expecting that Australia will get the 2023 Women's World Cup. I hope so.
Yeah, hopefully. Who else is bidding for it, though? I feel like it would just take a big bid from maybe China or, you know, one of the nations that have a bit more money to splash around than Australia. And
maybe.
I feel that it could be blown out of the water. So I think there's a joint bid from Korea, is there?
There's quite a potential for satire in the Women's World Cup bids for 2023 when you see the joint bid from North Korea and South Korea. And there's actually several other ones, which is actually a positive sign for the Women's World Cup getting more popular. But like at one point, the bids include like Bolivia, which barely has like a functioning women's soccer team.
Interesting.
But I was gonna get to my appearance. This was back in October of 2017, and I pretty idiotically tweeted that neither Australia nor Syria, which I was watching their game, would give the fifth place CONCACAF team much trouble in the World Cup qualifying playoff. And then that night, the U.S. got eliminated from the World Cup.
Yeah.
And then my Twitter mentions got lit up, deservedly, by indignant Australian soccer fans. And I'm just curious, how did I get the honor of meriting mention in your cartoon that week?
I think, firstly, I think what you tweet, think about all the things that have been tweeted and where yours sits on the sort of scale of offensiveness. It's pretty low down, I've got to say. And I think it was probably a reasonable shout. Like, Australia didn't have a good team going into that World Cup, and Syria, you know, that was a poor game. So, I mean, what you tweeted was, I think, fair enough. But the Australian football community, I think there's a lot of, I suspect there's a lot of similarities between Australian soccer and US soccer in terms of the way that the fans are very protective of of their teams and their sport, and that often comes from a place of soccer isn't the most popular sport in Australia,
right?
And the biggest sports often like beat down on it, and there's this perception that it's a game for foreigners. So I think that Australian soccer fans are really defensive, and if anyone is critical of them, then they'll lash out. And unfortunately for you, I think you had tweeted this at a time where there was most sort of online activity, and in Oz it must have been about this time, I guess, in the day. So most Aussies are on their way to work, whatever, looking through their phone, and they're like, who the hell is this guy? Oh, no, everyone knows who you are, Grant, but well, they do now anyway. there's posters of you on every lamppost in Australia.
Only if there were. If they were, that would be wonderful. I took it as just awesome that you included me. And I also pointed out, I think two other friends of mine in the media here got a mention, John Strong and Stu Holden, when they called Ibrahimovic's first goal for the LA Galaxy. Oh, yeah.
I knew Stuart Holden from his time playing in England, but I had no idea who the commentators were on that goal. So I think the two guys who I ended up drawing for that cartoon were just sort of generic commentator type people. So apologies if they bear no resemblance whatsoever to those guys. With the cartoon I drew with you, if my memory serves me correctly, that again, it was more about the reaction rather than, the thing that you had tweeted, which I thought wasn't that like outlandish, you know? So,
You weren't coming after me. It was just, which is an interesting window sort of into how you approach dealing with players, as you were saying earlier.
No. I mean, you are on my hit list. I'll come. No, you're fine. But, I think I had your phone setting on fire. I think I had you tweeting something and then going away doing something and then looking back at your phone and it was ablaze. So, I think there's a thing called, there's a hashtag for Australian football called Soccer Twitter, but soccer is spelled SOKKAH.
Okay.
I think you have legendary status within there. So, you're an anti-hero, but I think most reasonable people realize that it was a fair call. Like, Australia didn't end up doing much in the World Cup anyway. They did what they always seem to do, which is qualify relatively easily, although this last time was a bit of a struggle, and then go out in the first round without having really covered themselves in glory. So it was a fair call.
I do think that you're very much right on the similarities between Australian soccer and American soccer. And I've noticed this whenever I talk to somebody from Australia about it. I think Australia and MLS are like the only two leagues in the world that don't have promotion and relegation, or at least leagues of any size. And the insecurity among the fan bases, I think there's some similarities there. That there's a thriving women's game is cool. It's not just stuff to make fun of. It's there's some good things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're right. And I think it's just the size of the countries as well. Like the landmass makes it hard to get from, to go and watch a game on one side of the country to the other side. And that's probably why it's hard to get for the game to, maybe it's why it's hard, it, how can I put this, for the game to become organized. I don't know if that's a factor, like for national organizations and national movements to come together, at least, 100 years ago, whatever. Can you tell that this is all coming off the top of my head? I haven't thought through this argument at
all. Not to worry.
I need another coffee. I'm flagging.
We're wrapping up here with David Squires, who has been wonderful to take this much time to come on the podcast. By the way, we had Sepp Blatter on the podcast earlier this year, so you have that in common.
Wow. Me and Sepp. Should have got us on together. Can we do that next time?
But I wanted to ask you, have you done any non-soccer work like political cartoons or anything else?
Sure, I did. When was the last UK general election? Would have been 2017, I think. They seem to come around every couple of years. Mm-hmm. So I did some stuff in the lead up to that. I did maybe a month, 6 weeks of cartoons about that. That was interesting. I think I enjoyed it. I'm not sure if I'd be in a rush to do it again. Because what I found was most people are happy with me doing jokes about their football team. Mm-hmm. But if I do jokes about a certain political party, or, you know, certain MPs or their backgrounds, I had a few experiences like you where my phone was ablaze. So it was interesting. Whether I'd do it again, I don't know. Luckily, there's an election in England about every 8 months. So, I might be, if I ever want to dip my toe back in again, I'll be able to do so.
And lastly, I just wanted to finish by asking you about your books. You've had a few here. Goalless Draws, Illuminating the Genius of Modern Football, and two volumes of The Illustrated History of Football. What's in them?
So the Goalless Draws is that was the most recent book, and that is a compilation of the last 5 years of cartoons I've done for The Guardian. And so if you're not familiar with my work and you want to sort of find out more, then that's probably the place to go. The Illustrated History of Football, there's two volumes of that, and that sounds pretty much fairly self-explanatory. The first volume looks back throughout the whole history of football as told through a series of 100 cartoons. And then the second volume is about individual players and managers through history. So there's a cartoon about, you know, Pirlo, Gascoigne, blah, blah, blah. So that's me. Those three books, go out, buy them. I think I get $1 from each one, so that it all goes to a good cause.
He is David Squires. You can find his work in The Guardian. He is on Twitter at Squires_David, where you can usually find that week's cartoon. David, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you. Lovely to talk to you.
Thanks for listening to the Planet Football Podcast. I'd like to thank David Squires, as well as producer Harry Swartout, and everyone at Sports Illustrated who supports this podcast. Remember, if you like the podcast, it would really help us if you go to Apple Podcasts and provide a rating and a review, and we'd appreciate you recommending the podcast to someone you know. See you next time.